Okay, we're on Daf Chav Ches Amid Beis 28b, another statement of one of the rabbis regarding various issues of testimony, as that's what this whole chapter is all about. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Rabba, the grandson of Chana, said, Me'id Adam Le'ishto Arusa. A man may testify concerning his Arusa wife. Remember, we learned that in marriage, their Jewish marriage, there's a two-step procedure. Step number one is Erusin, where the man gives her the ring and says that she is Mekudeshes to him. But then there is the second stage. They still do not live as husband and wife until the Nisuim. So we're talking about a woman who's an Arusa, which very poorly translated into English is engaged, but that's not really what it means. But it's first stage of marriage. As the notes say, they may not live yet together as husband and wife. After Erusin, the husband is called an Arus, and his wife is called an Arusa. Okay? So now the question is, are they related closely enough that they can't testify, that he can't testify? Now, a man cannot testify concerning his full-fledged wife, the woman that lives with him every day. He cannot testify. That's without question. Question, if it's only an Arusa, so they're really... Now, for example, let's say he wants to back out of the marriage after Erusin only. What does he got to do, Sneer? Does he just walk away? He's got to give her a bill of divorce, and she gets a ksuva from him. Okay? Because they are married. When he gives her the erusin, she's forbidden to any man. She cannot be with any man. To release the bond of erusin, even if it's only erusin, you need a get. Okay? You need a get. And you have to give her a ksuva.
That's right.
Okay? So there is some connection. There is a certain degree of connection, because if they weren't connected at all, he wouldn't have to give her a get. But the fact he has to give her a get and a ksuva, backs her to you.
Leg.
Leg. Stretch. Good, good, good. I have to do that every day. Okay, anyway.
A ksuva, pay her the amount that's written on the...
Pay the ksuva, whatever the ksuva is. Whatever the ksuva, even though I didn't live a day with her. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful. And that was in those days. We don't do that nowadays. We do it all in one shot. But the question is, can he testify? So Rabba Bar Chana says, yes, he may testify. They're not considered that close to each other. That is his opinion. Of course, that's not the only opinion. Ravina qualifies that statement, though. It's not carte blanche. Ravina says, Lo Amran Ela La'afuke Mine. This was only said if his testimony is there to remove money from her. In other words, he may testify in her detriment. Let's say a guy says to the woman, you owe me $100. She says, not. And he knows testimony that she owes him. So if it's in her not favor, what's the word for not favor? Detriment, right? It must be a better word. Must be a...
Prejudice.
No. Detrimental. If the testimony is detrimental to you, to her, then he's believed. Because he has no reason to lie. But if it's she gains by the testimony, she gets $100, let's say. Lohamina, we don't believe her. Why would he not be impartial? In other words, we're looking for impartiality.
The money, right?
So if she gets money, guess what? They are going to get married. And if she has money, there's a good chance that money's going to go into the marriage. So therefore, he's going to get it. He's not impartial. So, in other words, there's two issues here. There's an issue of being a relative, and then there's an issue of impartiality. Sometimes a judge will disallow a witness, not because he's related. He's just going to feel he's not partial. Impartial, rather. He's not impartial. Let's say he's his business partner. And it would make a difference if this guy loses a lot of money. In other words, the judge has to use his discretion if seeing is the person impartial witness. What if let's say the guy who there's a testimony if he gets a death penalty or not. Okay, he happens to be on the Israeli Olympic team, and his coach wants to testify in his defense. We would assume he's not impartial. He doesn't want him getting killed before the Olympics, right? All right. So I'm just giving you an example where the judge would say, we can't trust him because he's not impartial. So the same thing over here. Although in other words, the Gemara is saying up to this point, where Rabbi Brachana says, well, yeah, in terms of being related, they're not related and he can testify. Comes on Ravina and says, that's true. They may not be related, but there's still a question of impartiality. So it depends what he's testifying for. That's what these two rabbis say. But then the Gemara turns around and say, nah, I don't agree with any of this. The Gemara rules against all this and says, Velohi, this is not so at all. Rather like this, Loshna does not matter, Lafuke, whether to remove money from her, Veloshna Le'iluye, or to bring money into her, give to her, Lo Ma'inan, he is not believed. That's what the Gemara says. We don't believe at all. So now the Gemara wants to understand what's the logic behind over here. Ma da toch. Gemara explains why it rejects the ruling. That's a ma da toch. What is your reasoning? Now, it's interesting. He's saying for allowing an Oris to testify concerning his Arusa. So that's this commentary doesn't make a lot of sense. We'll see in a minute. We'll see what the Gemara's question. Ma da toch. What do you think? In other words, Gemara's going to say, Gemara's saying, well, what did you think why she should be allowed? In other words, we had like this. We had three steps so far. We had, let's go back. First statement was Rabbi Barachan. Rabbi Barachan said the man could testify regarding his Arusa. Ravina qualified it. Gemara says, no, she can't testify. So now the Gemara is explaining why they don't like it. It's saying, okay, well, why did you say he's believed? What reason could you say that he was believed? All right, and we'll attack that. Kida Amar Abchia Bar Ami Mishmed Ula. Apparently, it's based on a ruling of Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami, who said in the name of Ula somewhere else in a Braisa, who says the following regarding if a man dies. One second. What about Tuma? We'll see regarding Tuma over here. You say Ishta Arusa. Okay, a man whose Arusa dies. Okay. Lo. He does not mourn, lo onen, he does not mourn for his onen. This is a separate law now. I guess you, based on this law, you know, you mourn, the real laws of mourning are only for the closest relatives. Husband, wife, children, parents, siblings. That's it. So the question is, what about his wife who's only an arusa? So lo onen, he does not become an onen. An onen is first stage of mourning, that's from the day of death until the burial. That person is in a state of aninus, where all kinds of halachas apply. So we say, if his wife, who is only an arusa, dies, lo onein, he doesn't become an onein for her. Also, what does he not do? Velo metamelo, and doesn't become tummy for, let's say, if he was a kohen, where a kohen may, a regular kohen, may become tummy to his six closest relatives. She's not a close enough relative, only an arusa, does not become tummy to her. Reverse as well. What about if he dies and she's alive? V'chein he, if the orus, the man, dies, lo onenes, she does not become an onen over him. V'lo mitamalo, and she doesn't become tame for him. Now, look, commentary. This cannot mean that she may not come into contact with his corpse if she is a kohen's daughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, why couldn't she be metame? Because a kohen's daughter is allowed to be tame. For somebody, for a kohen's wife or daughter to become tame from a corpse. Only for a man there's a prohibition. Rather, Bryce refers to one's obligation to contaminate himself for his seven close relatives as derived from the verse, lo yitama, he shall contaminate himself. So an arusa need not contaminate himself for a deceased husband who is not considered physically close. Okay, clear. So what do we say? So let's continue. So this is all, who said all this? Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami. He said, in the name of Ula, that in a couple that has just erisin, they're not close enough to be mourners for each other. They're not close enough to be tamei for each other. Let's see what else they're not close enough for. Mesa, if she dies, ena yorsha, he doesn't inherit her. Whatever asset she has, he does not inherit her. The reverse, Mace, who, If he dies, careful, she doesn't inherit him, but there is the ksuva. Gova ksuva. So she gets the ksuva because there was that bond. In other words, there's that financial bond that exists, although not a a marriage, a filial bond, or whatever you want to call it. It's not like they're husband and wife living together. It's just a monetary debt he incurs upon himself. But in other words, when the erusin happens, the only thing that happens, they are not considered husband and wife. The only thing is, she now is prohibited to any other man. A woman normally can marry whoever she wants to marry. And if she doesn't want to care about being a zona, could sleep with anybody she wants to. Once the erusin happens, what happens, she may not be with another man. Now the cost, as it were, that he has to pay for that, is there's a ksuva there, that in case you want to get rid of her, and she lost out opportunities for better men, whatever, yeah, that's the ksuva, right? But that's it. It's just a quid pro quo for the fact that she can't marry somebody, so he has to back it up with a financial bank. But that's not really a relationship is there. So the fact that he pays the ksuva doesn't really say there's any relation. So anyway, so here's the point. So if you learn this, if let's say you only know this, well, look, if they die, they don't get tummy to each other. They don't inherit each other. So obviously there's no connection. There's only just a slight financial connection with the ksuva. So now what would you assume from that about testimony? You'd say they can testify because they're not considered related. Yeah. And that's what the Gemara is saying. That's the first person over here who was Rav Bar Chana who said that he can testify. And we said as long as he's not partial. So he says, you know why you made that ruling? Because you based it on this law that we just learned. But it's not the same. There's a difference between them. And just because they're not metame to each other, and just because they don't inherit each other, does not mean they may testify against each other. That's where we're saying the difference. Because here's the difference. Hasam over day, bishero tola rachmana. There the Torah makes it dependent on she'er, which means close relationship. The Torah uses a specific adjective to describe the relationship between people who have to be tameh to each other upon death. The Torah says that a kohen may not contaminate himself with a corpse except for his flesh which is close to him. It has to be like a shtickle his flesh. So certainly parents, children, siblings, it's the same genes. That's the same flesh. A husband, and a real husband together is also considered, as it says in the beginning of Genesis, a man shall leave his parents and marry a woman and become one flesh. When you're married and living together, you're one flesh. So the law of Tumah is a fleshy issue, so to speak. Your fleshness. Same it is with inheritance. Regarding inheritance, the Torah states, how does inheritance work? The Gemara says, his flesh, which is close to him, from his family, he will inherit her. Oh, it means a wife again. Okay, so therefore, that is a fleshy issue. And Arusa, with whom the husband may not have marital relations, is not included. They're not the same flesh yet. So there's the difference. Over there, we talk about Tumah and inheritance. It's a question, are you of the same flesh? She'er. So therefore, Akati, so still they're only engaged. Lo she'ero, lav she'er. There's no close fleshy relationship. But testimony, really, it's not based on being a relative. Because really being a relative, you're not puzzled to be a witness because you're a relative per se. But there's a reason behind that. Because you're not partial. Still, it boils down to partiality, not the fact that you're one flesh. Tumah is a law. Let's say you have two people are best friends. Two guys are not related, are best, they're like brothers. They were raised together, whatever. Let's say even as stepbrothers. An adopted brother. No, an adopted brother. Let's say there's an adopted brother, an adopted child goes into the family. He lives with his parents, lives with his whole life, from baby. Parents die. Is he chayv to sit shiva? No. Period. Does he inherit them legally according to Torah law? No. what's going on over here? Because it's a flesh issue. He's not the same genes. Now, wait a minute. Can he testify regarding that?
No.
He's not related because he's as partial as anything could be. He's partial. Right? So really relatives, the psul of relatives is a psul of partiality. So therefore, what was the mistake here? The fact he says, well, if they're engaged, they can be metame each other, they can inherit each other, because they're not flesh connection. So that's fine, but that's nothing to do with testimony. Hacha here, when it comes to testimony, the reason why we disallow relatives or anyone else who's ever disallowed to testify is mishum ikarove daito. There's closeness of feeling that generally a relative would have. Now you're going to say, well, what about? But we can't make exceptions to the rule. Let's say there were two twins separated at birth. Separated at birth, and they gave one up for adoption. Yeah. Right, they gave one they kept, one they gave for adoption, whatever. Or what was that play about with the kings where there was, I forgot, it was a famous play. A king had two twins, and they didn't want to have any machlokes that, you know, one brother would want to fight with the other, who would be the heir. So they kept one and put the other one and put an iron mask around him. It was a famous play. Yeah. Put an iron mask around him, and he was, they didn't want to talk about him because they felt
if the men in the iron mask,
maybe something like that. Maybe it was whatever movie, yeah, or play. Movie. I don't know. Anyway, so that's years ago. I only remember that point.
Yes.
But the point is, now what if one of them dies? Would the other one have to sit shiva for him? I mean, theoretically, yes.
Yeah,
even though he doesn't even know him.
Yeah.
Now, could he testify? No. Because he's still a relative. Even though there's no partial, we can't make differences. Once we say relatives are out, we say, yeah, but he had nothing to do with him. We can't say this relative, yes, this relative, no. Right? So therefore, over here, the fact they're engaged, right? There, you can't say that there isn't impartiality over here, because the fact that they're going to get married means there's some connection to them. So that's what it is. Just two more words, and we'll finish. And therefore, here, when it depends on impartiality, the fact that they are betrothed, v'ha ikorva daita lagaba, and indeed the aris feels a closeness to the arusa. Therefore, he may not testify at all. Commentary, although a husband may not testify concerning his arusa, he is not ineligible to testify concerning his arusa's relatives. That's interesting. Otherwise, it would be a problem. This is because the Gemara cites the reason for treating arusa as a relative because they have mutual sympathy, which does not extend to his or her relatives. On the other hand, a full wife, however, is an absolute relative, and this qualifies to send it to relatives. It never comes out like this. If you're married to a woman, we said the rule is husband and wife is one.
Yeah.
So now, whatever is her side, so you can't testify regarding her brother, father, all that, it all goes equal. But when it's just engaged, you don't yet know the mishpacha. You know? they really aren't relatives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't kick in. So we only can say between each other there's a closeness, but otherwise not. Yeah, you had a question?
We said that because of the closeness of the feelings.
Yes.
Which opens up a whole new category.
Yes.
I already said
that's why the Olympic guys coach can't test it. It's the judge's discretion.
Well, she had a
oh my God.
The judge says to the witness, if a witness comes in any case, right? He would say, listen, what's your connection to the case over here? Well, it is this. Okay, tell me what connection you have with either the litigants. Well, what do you mean? Are you business partners with them? Do you daven in shul? Tell me what your connection to them is. He says, I don't know either of them. I just happened to be driving by when I saw the accident. You're total
okay.
Strangers? Okay, fine.
Okay.
Guy says, well, I've davened next to him for the last 30 years.
My brother.
Whoa. So then he could say, again, it's not that the for sure will not accept the testimony, but they take it in great grain of salt, as it were. In other words, maybe they would use it as an adjunct to other things that they may know. But we don't. A relative is just thrown out. There's like nothing to discuss. But so therefore, we're going to say an arusa is thrown out, nothing to discuss. And if, once you go beyond that, then the judge has to sit through and think through and says, do we throw him out or not? And definitely the judge has the rights to throw him out. So that's it. That is part of being a judge, is you have to be, there's a gray area where that's in any judgment, even when you have to have testimony. Well, he brings one set of witnesses. The judge has to use the seichel. So part of the seichel is, well, do I think there's a close enough relationship? Well, you know, I just see him in the club once a month, you know. Then that's an area where the judge has to make a determination the way he feels. Yeah. Okay, that's the...
Amen, excuse me, one more thing. Amen and Izarusa.
Yeah.
There is a close...
So they can't testify.
Decide...
So fine, that's why they can't testify. That's what we're saying.
So how? Why do we have to...
No, that's the answer. The first rabbi said he could.
Yeah.
So now we're saying you're wrong.
Okay.
And you based it on the fact that they don't give, they don't have to be metame. They don't have to mourn for each other. They don't inherit. But that's not that's the true. Point. That is the whole point over here is that's why they cannot. However, as we said in the commentary, but he may testify regarding other relatives she has because she's not really a relative to him. And that closest, that would be the same thing. Let's go back to the Israeli coach where the Olympic sprinter's cousin is under a death penalty issue. Then we would accept the testimony, perhaps, of the Olympic coach. Because just because I know him doesn't mean I'm going to do it for his cousin. You know, that there's no connection over that. That could be. But that's clear regarding other relatives. So it comes out, an arusa to an arus may not, arus cannot testify regarding arusa, but may testify regarding her relatives.
Aren't there cases where, especially in those days, where there was really no relationship yet, because the, you know, the parents decided they're going to get hooked up, and met each other for 2 minutes?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter because we can't make exceptions because that's not the only type of arusa situation. There was arusas where the guy knows the woman for a while. So we have to make certain low plugs. We don't discriminate over here. Once you've gone to the state where you're willing to be, you've given a kedushin to her, that's called close enough feelings regardless of what the reality may be because according to halacha, during the halacha, the guy's got to see. You know, first of all, even if they get engaged, remember this is you're making a mistake. You know, we're talking about arusa. He has to see her.
Yeah.
Okay, you're talking about the chassidish shidduchim, right? Even then, they still have to see her. Even in the most chassidish, even if they arranged it before, they didn't do the erusin yet. If you're doing an erusin, you must see the woman. So if you see the woman, so already he feels the closest to her, the fact that he saw her. Just an arranged shidduch would not be. If, let's say, the parents got together and said, okay, they're going to get married when they grow up, then he could testify, because there is no closeness, because there's no official legal activity that happened that bring any type of connection at all. He didn't even give her a ring, even though then there's no connection at all. All right, we start the next sugya. We go now to, this is a little bit tricky, and we're going to start it. We're not going to finish it today. Hopefully we'll finish it tomorrow. And the next relative is the chorgo, the stepson. If you recall, we mentioned there were 10 different relatives, if you still have your chart, there were 10 different types of relatives. Okay? We mentioned, now here's the interesting part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that a chorgo levado, it said all the relatives, it said they, their sons, and their son-in-laws.
Yeah.
Remember? Let's just refresh our memories with a little chart just for a second. Refresh my memory. Okay, here you go. There's all the, look, I put all the relatives and there's numbers over there. You remember I numbered 1 through 9, if you recall. Look, I start with the brother in the middle is 1, and you don't see it, but off to the right, where the 1 is, if you go wife, sister, and right after that was husband, he was number 9. Brother-in-law was number 9. It's not on the, you can't see it there, but if you have the sheet still. So, and then we have stepson. Where's stepson? You see me?
10.
Stepson is 10. You see that? So, stepson. So it said like this, the stepson levado. The stepson alone, he cannot testify against him, but not the stepson's sons and son-in-laws. That's the levado. Look, I didn't put, see over there? I put steps, I didn't put anything below that. The Mishnah, we will see, says everybody else, they, their son, and their son-in-law. And that's what put all these lines over here. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to focus on, again, you don't see it, I'm sorry. Well, let me get the other chart without that. That one's also off the side. They're wrong. Oh, I could do that. I didn't realize that. One second. Yeah, you see, if I move it over, you see the brother is one to the right, wife, sister, and then brother-in-law. It's just the nine just gets cut off. You see over there? So that one is the one we're going to be discussing. Okay? Your wife's sister's husband. Yeah. Oh, no, your wife. No. Oh, your wife.
No.
Your wife, yeah, your wife's sister's
but
husband.
The wife is from the father-in-law wife. That's where you're coming from.
Yeah, the wife's...
From the father-in-law.
No, the wife's sister's husband. Brother-in-law. Okay, fine. So that one I marked number 9. And there's a reason why I marked number 9, all right? But let's just keep that in mind. Well, just for the sake of integrating the sugya, there's 10 different relatives that have been mentioned. One clearly says only him and not his son and son-in-laws are prohibited. That's the stepson. Okay? We're going to bring the brother-in-law into the mix. That one, that's why I marked him as number 9. The brother-in-law, we're going to see, is going to be a machlokes if the son or the son-in-law. I put on the chart, yes, because that's the simple reading of the Mishnah. But it's not going to be so simple. There's going to ultimately be the sugya is going to, in the beginning, the sugya is not going to be clear where it's going. So I'm telling you where it's going, so at least our minds can be ready to absorb it. Mm-hmm. Of the 10 relatives, the Mishnah said, well, not only they, but their sons and son-in-laws. But the Mishnah clearly made an exclusion to a stepson. Stepson, not his son and son-in-laws. Okay, that's, from the Mishnah alone, you walk away and say, okay, 9 out of the 10 relatives, it's them, their sons and stepsons, their sons and son-in-laws, and the stepson's the exception. We're now going to see another Tana emerging, that it seems that a brother-in-law also is also only the brother-in-law, not the sons and son-in-laws, to which is going to be a machlokes, and we're going to try to just fix it up. Now, if you recall, remember we said that one of the rabbis who analyzed the Mishnah said that although it was how many different types of relatives cannot testify. Remember he said the number 24? Remember that number 24?
Yeah.
Remember, why was it 24? Because it's the relative, that's 8, plus the relative son, plus the relative's son-in-law. Well, 24 means how many relatives and their sons and son-in-laws can't testify? 8. Problem is, on the board, there's 10. Yeah. This is where the problem is. Mm-hmm. There's 10 relatives on the board. So let's look at all the chess pieces over here. If we look at how many relatives cannot testify against him, 10. Clear. That we know. No question. What else do we know? Well, it says that they, not only they, but their sons and son-in-laws can't. We also know a stepson does not get that extension. So far, so good, right? Yeah. But the problem is, but this rabbi analyzed the Mishnah and says, well, that gives us a total of 24. Well, I mean, 24, what if it should be 27? Or right? Because there's really 9 times 3. Yeah, not it. So that these are all the part, not this is, so if that's the case, so here's the problem. The Mishnah, just look at the Mishnah alone, it says there's 10 relatives, and 9 out of all of them, except for the stepson, it's also their sons and their son-in-laws.
Yeah.
Right? But then what do we do with that other statement where the rabbi says this is 24? Yeah. That's where we got the problem. So therefore, you're going to see basically on the Tanaic level, there's going to be a machlokas if the brother-in-law, do we include his sons and son-in-laws? That is basically the discussion that the Gemara is going to have. So let's just start it. We're not going to finish it. But that I've given you the overview so you know what the issue is on the table. The first words coming will make no sense. I'm telling you right now, they're going to make no sense. 2 brises, very cryptic, doesn't give you a lot of information. Between the 2 brises, we think they're saying the same thing. Tana Rabbanan says a brise to the following. Tana Kama says, no name says, Chorgo levado. Stepson alone is disqualified from testifying. Just seems to be repeating the Mishnah. But now there's someone who argues on that. Got to be arguing. We're not sure what they're arguing about. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Giso, his brother-in-law. And what does he mean by his brother-in-law? His brother-in-law also not? Like, what does that mean, his brother-in-law? Okay, let's just, for the sake of argument, just we don't have anything to say. Okay, I guess his brother-in-law also only, and not his sons and son-in-law? No, we're not. Forget about what you learned in the Mishnah. We're just trying to understand what he's saying.
Okay.
We know for sure the Mishnah says stepson alone, period. Now, what's Rabbi Yossi doing? He's saying stepson and also a brother-in-law? Or not? Rabbi Yossi is an Amora. But it's not clear what he's saying. But something with the brother-in-law. And the brother-in-law, maybe only a brother-in-law and not the sons. Or not, it's not clear. It's not enough words for me to talk intelligently. So I'm not talking intelligently. Vitani, there's another Brisa. Idach says, Giso levado, Giso, his brother-in-law alone is disqualified. And now we got a new name for Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Chargo. Rabbi says, Chargo, his stepson. The Gemara is assuming right now. Now, you see, you have two Brises. One starts with no name and then Rabbi Yossi. The other one starts with no name and then Rabbi Yehuda. So you know what the Gemara is assuming? That the no names are the other rabbi from the other Brisa. The Gemara is assuming when the first one said no name, Chargo Levado, and Rabbi Yossi argues, that the first name was Rabbi Yehuda. And the second price has no name and then Rabbi Yehuda. The first name is Rabbi Yossi. Gemara's figuring it probably will make sense. So let's try to put the two prices and configure Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda together and what's going to happen. My comer, what are we trying to say over here? Okay, what is each Tana saying? Let's try to, just from the little information, just straight up with something. Elay Mahachim, maybe this is what it is saying. What? Chargal Rabbi Yehuda, this is got to put in the lines here. Rabbi Yehuda says, Chargal Levado, the Chargal, the stepson and not his children, for who had in Legisa, and also the brother-in-law and not his children, is that what you want to say? In other words, there's two people who it's only them and not their children, him and the brother-in-law. And guess what? For us, Rabbi Yossi Lemaymar, and Rabbi Yossi says the same thing, but just backwards. Maybe same thing, but just backwards. Legisa Levado, the son-in-law, the brother-in-law alone. It's two different prices. So it's two different rabbis. In other words, they're both saying the same thing.
Yeah, but different order, that's all.
That's all. But what does that mean? That means these two, only them and not their other ones.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. Elamasnisa, but our Mishnah doesn't say that. Diktani, the Mishnah clearly said, Giso, his brother-in-law, who? He, Ubino, and his sin, son, Vechos, and his son-in-law.
Yeah.
That's clear the Mishnah. So what are you going to say? Now you have a Mishnah. So the Mishnah money, who's the Mishnah going to be like? Well, can't be Lo Rabbi Yehuda, can't be Rabbi Yehuda, Velo Rabbi Yossi. It's not Rabbi Yossi. And it's assumed that an anonymous view expressed in Mishnah has got to reflect one rabbi, Atana. You say a Mishnah, it can't go against every Tana in the book. So that is not a good interpretation. So that's out. So what is the right interpretation? And we're going to stop it over here. Okay, we're going to stop it over here.